Barefoot and Pregnant by Gwen Levy and the Breakdowns. Great song, and I felt like an appropriate one given all the discourse around the Chiefs kicker, Kansas City Chiefs kicker this week, and his wild-ass commencement speech that I think can be summarized as women belong in the kitchen. And look, we do not subscribe to that mentality whatsoever, but a shocking number of people do on the internet, which is horrifying. But that's not what we're here to talk about today. Thank you all so much for joining us. I wanted to give a quick preamble before we get into our show. I know that this is later in the week than what I had planned, but running a independent podcast by yourself while also having a full-time job that is extremely demanding sometimes makes it a little bit difficult to get things out in a timely and punctual manner. So I do apologize for that, friends, but I appreciate you sticking with us, and we hope to be on a more regular publishing schedule here very soon. In fact, I do believe the plan is to put another episode out starting on this coming Tuesday and having it be Tuesdays from here on out. Fingers crossed that we do that. I'm hopeful. I believe in myself. So that's what matters. Anyway, we've got a great show today. We've got a little bit of a shorter show with me and John's segments, and that's because we have a bit of a longer interview with a gentleman named Kenneth Vieg. He is the founder and lead person behind Chad, a Fallout 76 podcast, an incredible scripted fictional podcast about Fallout 76, which, if y'all don't know, is based in Appalachia, and we talk a lot about that and how that game has influenced the culture of Appalachia and brought more people into the fold who are interested in it, both virtually and in real life. And so it's a really great conversation, and I'm excited for you all to listen to it. Even if you've never played Fallout before, or if you're a huge fan, I think you'll like it regardless. I'm a huge fan. John's never played before. We both had a great time. With that, let's get into a little segment that I threw together with Big John where we talk about whether West Virginia is the South. Let's talk about geography.
Geography?
You ever good at that?
Oh, okay. Because I was not, and you can ask my seventh grade geography teacher who once yelled at me so much that I still have blacked out any time I've talked about geography. Because I legitimately do not understand it. I'm not good at it. I'll never pretend to be. The only thing that I know for a fact of where it is my house. Everything else could be moving at all times. I don't know.
Well, if you black out during discussions of geography, we're going to have a hell of a time getting through this episode.
What'd you say?
You said, I black out every time I talk about or I hear about geography. And I was like, well, then we're going to have a hell of a time getting through this episode if you're blacking out.
What'd you say?
God damn it.
I just want to see how many times you did. I was prepared to not stop. That is
I know you were.
I was just gonna keep going. Alright.
I don't know if we would have gained listeners or lost it if it kept going.
Yeah, I don't know, but
So I posed an age-old question on the tweet machine this past week. It's important. It's important that we talk about it. These are the pressing issues that face our nation. You know, last week we talked about the ongoing crisis in Gaza and the protests, and today we're talking about, is West Virginia in the South? You know, we cover all the issues on this show. First of all, before going through some of the commentary and the results, I want your fresh take. You and I are from the same area of West Virginia. Is it the South?
I have not. I saw that you put this up. I have not looked at the results. So I don't even know what the results are. I don't even know what anyone has said, to be honest. So the question is West Virginia the South? Is that what we're talking?
Yes.
It is, to me, absolutely the South.
That's interesting. I did not expect that take.
I have always thought that West Virginia should be part of the South and is part of the South. I was watching actually something the other day where there's a comedian in Tennessee. He's a pretty funny guy. Although I did take I didn't like what he said in the video, because he said he put Virginia in the South but not West Virginia, which that didn't make any sense to me. But he said to the point where, like, you know, I don't want to split Virginia in two because they already did that and nobody wants West Virginia anyway or some shit like that. So screw that guy. But anyway, I think that if Virginia is even in the conversation, West Virginia has to be in.
It's a hot take. It's a very hot take. Some people could be very pissed off at that answer. I'm not saying I'm one of them. Don't worry.
Okay. Well, what were the results? Let me hear this.
Okay, and then I'll tell you my thoughts. I'm trying to.
No, tell me your thoughts first. I don't want them to be. I don't want to be swayed.
I've never thought of it as that. I'm not going to say it's not. I've never personally thought of it as the South because nobody I knew ever referred to it as the South, and it just never occurred to me, culturally or otherwise. What I will say about Virginia, though, is that there is an argument that people have made. I'm not saying it's correct or I agree with it or whatever, but people have argued Virginia's the South because Richmond was the capital of the Confederacy.
You know, now that you say it, see, I don't really have a strong opinion here.
I mean, but I think that's like a historical
okay.
argument,
I guess. Okay, so let me say this. I'm keeping my answer of yes, I think West Virginia is the South, but I want to say, culturally speaking, now. Like, obviously, if we go all the way back to the Civil War and all that crap, that's different. But I'm saying right now, as we sit, culturally speaking, I think it is.
Virginia's not culturally like places like Alabama, Georgia, Tennessee.
West Virginia. I mean, I'm sure Virginia seems to me like culturally it is not, but I also don't go to Virginia that often. I do know that Virginia has some great spots, and there are some spots that remind me of like West Virginia, you know, Tennessee, Kentucky, all of those places. But I don't know, for some reason in my head, Virginia has always been a northern state. Like, to me, I don't know why. Just ask.
I take issue with Virginia, Kentucky, and this is not going to fit into this equation.
Sure.
Pennsylvania. Why? Because they're simping for the British, all right? And that's the only reason. Now, I'm sorry, Kentucky. I'm sorry, Virginia. I'm sorry, Pennsylvania. But
okay. Why
are we calling ourselves a Commonwealth? I don't get it. Virginia, why are you naming all of your shit after fucking British kings and dukes and stuff and lords?
Okay.
Name it after Lord, right. I don't know, Lord Pat White or something. Not Lord Fairfax.
Lord Powell.
I'm going off on a tangent.
He should have a statue.
Yeah, him. Fucking the greatest quarterback in West Virginia University history, not Robert E. Lee. I know we're spanning a lot of things here besides geography, but I don't think anybody would argue with that.
Also, I don't think Virginia cares about Pat White.
I don't think Virginia gives a fuck. I just meant in general. But no, I don't think Virginia gives a fuck about Pat White. So, okay, back to the discussion of West Virginia. I never actually got to the results.
Can you tell me what the results
yes,
are?
Yes, okay. So, I listed three options.
Okay.
Part of the South, not part of the South, or debatable.
All right, what was the winner?
Almost 2,000 people voted. The winner with 42% was not part of the South.
Okay.
Debatable, 30%, part of the South, 28%. So, wasn't too far off. There's definitely a debate being had.
I've often said I'm part of the silent minority.
Well, that is true. Not very silent, but, you know, hey, it's okay.
That's okay.
I am interested to hear from people who do think it's the South. You said because you think it's culturally the South. What do you mean by that?
Well, I just, so like the cultural things that I think about the South are like, you know, people are nice. They really like biscuits and gravy. they also eat country fried steak or green fried tomatoes. Most of my thoughts are around food.
Okay, so food, if we're looking at the culinary culture, West Virginia part of the South.
Yes. Okay. You're going to look at me right now. And you're going to tell me a place where Tudor's Biscuit World was borned, that this is not the South? There's no way.
I don't have an argument currently against that.
I don't see how you could.
I don't. I absolutely do not.
It's probably the best argument I've ever made.
I don't want to make an argument against it. I think it probably is up there.
It's top 10.
I would like to read some responses. We had a very saucy one from... where'd it go?
Hold on. That's a weird username, but okay. Oh, shit, where'd it go?
That's honestly not the weirdest. This one, Laura Laws, I don't know. They said, we divorced half the state to join the union. Y'all learned it in West Virginia history. Come on, now.
Okay, see, that's what I'm saying. If we're going to that, then yes, I agree. Then we're not the South. I'm talking today's cultural togetherness. I put us in the South. Now, if we're going back then, I agree, not the South.
Bargain Bin Tweet says, it depends on where you are in West Virginia. At least from my perspective as a visitor from the South who's been to about 3/5 of the counties there, like McDowell County, yeah, dog, that's the South. Wheeling, nah.
Okay, see, I think that's a good point, is that you have, like, obviously, I'm not putting the Eastern Panhandle of West Virginia in the South. I don't think that they culturally fit with the South anymore. But if I'm talking McDowell, if I'm talking Tyler County, even if I'm talking Wood County, then I'm putting West Virginia in the South culturally.
That is a blistering hot take. I don't agree, but that's okay. We don't have to. We're allowed to disagree on this show. I'll be interested to see what people say to that, though, what the audience responds to, because we had some people that were really fired up on the old tweet machine about suggestions that West Virginia could be the South. This person named Thelsey, I think, said, these people have some weird names. I was taught West Virginia is Southern... the southernmost northern state because they left the Confederacy, but West Virginia is also the northernmost southern state because we are still below the Mason-Dixon. Okay.
Okay.
I'm going to go out on a limb here. I think this is going to be controversial.
Tell me.
Bear down. Okay. I think that the Mason-Dixon line is not a good at all frame of reference for the South. And I'm not talking shit on this person, by the way. I'm sure, and it's What the Chell is their name. Sorry.
What did you originally call them?
Well, their handle looked like it said Thelsey, and it still does.
Okay.
Because you can have the name and then have the handle. So I meant the name. The name looks like Thelsey.
The way you're announcing these names, it sounds like you drank a handle.
I fucking wish I did. This is water. I just can't fucking read. One guy, very insightful comment. This person is always trolling us. It's Mark15929689. Sure, it's a real person. He said, speaking of checking in, did they ever catch the guy who sabotaged the power station in North Carolina? No earthly idea, you fucking terminally online piece of shit.
What does that mean?
I don't even goddamn know.
Does he ask you that a lot? I don't know.
No, he kept asking me, what is a woman, like a year ago, so if that tells you anything.
Oh, okay. Seems like a person.
Seems like a person who's really interested in important things. Read a couple more, actually. There can be more than one right answer. True, also boring. Let's find a good one.
That's what I wrote on every question for the SAT. There can be more than one answer.
It depends.
Turns out, not true.
This person, Aaron P., said, again with a P, all P. of my Confederate-loving family from Wayne to Mercer definitely think they're part of the South. That is heavily implying something.
Yeah, jeez.
Appreciate it, though, Aaron.
I do like how... A lot of our questions that we pose are just used as, like, family airing of grievances.
Yes.
Have you noticed that? That happens a lot.
Absolutely.
Yeah, I love it.
My piece of shit uncle thinks this, so of course I don't think so.
Yeah. Do you like Tudor's biscuits? Well, my racist piece of shit aunt does, so I think you know my answer.
It's like the other day when we were talking about Ponderosa, and he's like, yeah, my only memory of Ponderosa is going there with my racist grandfather.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, but to be fair, clarified Mrs. Ponderosa more.
Oh, as he should.
As he should.
West Virginia is south of the Mason-Dixon line, therefore it's a south. Okay.
Oh, there's your Mason-Dixon.
Before we move on, the Mason-Dixon thing, why? Why is that a thing? Is it a historical thing? Because that would imply that all of Maryland is the south, and I can't. I'm sorry. I can't get there.
I don't know. I don't know
that
why.
That means Washington, D.C. is.
But it is something that has gone generation to generation. I don't know why, but I know it exists.
It's okay. But saying that below the Mason-Dixon line is the South is kind of like saying I gotta go to the store to get bread and milk. People always say it, but does it actually make any sense?
I know my dad said it, never came back.
Yeah, well, we know why that makes sense.
Yeah, I was eating a.
Last question for you though, Kentucky. What is it? Is it the South? Is it not? What is it?
Kentucky, I really like your point there of the whole Commonwealth thing, but I'm including it in the South because I think it also culturally aligns, and that's what I'm basing my decision on only.
I would like to hear from Kentuckians. Well, I might put that poll out later because I don't know what people think of it. I don't know. I feel like it's been evenly split in the past, but Kentucky is just sort of an anomaly. It's kind of like West Virginia in that respect. It's a bit of an anomaly.
Yeah, I think there's going to be more people who view that as the South than they did West Virginia.
Oh, I agree. I think also because it is more Southern, technically. Oh, well. I don't know. This debate will live on. I think we've obviously come to a very definitive conclusion, though, so you're welcome, America.
Wow. This I looked it up because I wanted to know about this Mason-Dixon thing.
Let it rip.
This person on, is it Quora?
Yeah, that website is dog shit.
Yeah, but this person's answer is pretty good. I will give you that. On November 15th, it was asked, is everything below the Mason-Dixon line the South? Well, long story short, this person says, the Mason-Dixon line, it's not like you cross the imaginary line and suddenly you're in the South and everything is warm, the temperature changes from 30 to 50, you take your shoes off and go fishing and grow crops year-round.
That is true.
It was never intended to separate the North and the South. It had to do with King of England granting Lord Baltimore, another lord, a charter and a king granting a charter to William Penn that conflicted due to miscalculations in latitude. Obviously, Maryland and Delaware are not the South. In fact, they are geographically north. Delaware is right next to Maryland, though the line does not run directly over Delaware. All of Delaware, except the 15-mile arc around Wilmington, lies to the south and east of that line. So if you were to believe that, then Delaware would be the South, and Maryland, this just says, and then they finally kind of sound like you at the end. I'm kind of sick of the lack of geographical and historical disregard and ineptness perpetuated by many that push from their Southern Maryland agenda.
Thank you. So we got a great interview today. People have been blowing us up. Mike Mallow, one of them, calling him out for not covering Fallout 76 on this show. And believe me, I wanted to. I fucking love Fallout. It's one of my favorite game series of all time. And if you don't know, Fallout 76, their newest game, newest, it came out in like 2017, but it's based entirely in Appalachia. And very like dialed in from a geographic and scenic standpoint. You've got places like the Greenbrier Hotel down to Hillbilly Hot Dogs. And, you know, and Woodburn Hall at WVU and everything in between in a post-apocalyptic wasteland. And so it's something that's had an interesting cultural impact on the region, both from a tourism standpoint and just a general human interest from a completely different community of people who otherwise would have no reason to have interest in West Virginia or Appalachia in general. And so we had on our show a guy named Kenneth Vieg. He is the founder and chief writer and host of Chad, a Fallout 76 podcast. It's a great fictional podcast. They're in, I think, their second or third season now and have two more down the pipeline. A really great show. They just reached their million download mark, which is a huge accomplishment. And he is so knowledgeable about this. He is friends with some of the developers. He's really tied into that that virtual community that is becoming a non-virtual community in Appalachia. And we just had a great discussion about that, about the game and its impact on Appalachia, and about what he has done with this platform to raise a ton of money for Alzheimer's Research and St. Jude's Children's Research Hospital. It is honestly some of the most impressive work that I've seen in fundraising from just a handful of people. It's really impressive.
Yeah, and this is also one of those interviews where you get to realize how dumb I really am when it comes to this stuff, because for like the first 20 minutes, I don't think I talk because I have no idea what's going on, but I love listening. So that was fantastic.
I mean, if you haven't played the game, like, it's hard to be able to talk about it.
That's what I mean. I don't know anything about that game. Never played it. I've never played a single Fallout. Not gonna lie to you. Never played one.
It's great.
I probably am. Actually, after this interview, Taylor, my wife, is more likely to play games like that. And so I told her all about this game, and I think she's going to play it.
It's honestly really cool to see the virtual world of Appalachia in a post-apocalyptic, like, 2077 world. It's really neat. You mentioned coal, though, and the extraction industry and how it's wreaked havoc on the land, and that is a powerful metaphor for the setting of this game. The premise of it...
And you pointed that out.
Truth. The premise of it is, like, it's an online game, and so they're adding things to it. It's not, like, it's a continuous storyline to some extent, but the premise is that people were in a Fallout vault and are emerging in Appalachia to rebuild, and is very reminiscent of rebuilding from when the coal companies came and pillaged the entire land, blew the tops off mountains, et cetera, et cetera. There is a powerful metaphor there. I won't talk about it too much because Kenneth gets way more into it, and it's just a really great interview, and Kenneth is just a really great guy. Ken, it has been very exciting to get you onto this show. I will just say that I'm a self-professed Fallout nerd, and so this awesome. Is just exciting from that standpoint for me. John will probably roll his eyes a little bit at that, but I've been following what you've been doing and have just been really impressed with your show, with what you've done with your platform, and would love to talk a little bit about that, but also just about your take on how Fallout 76 has shaped or impacted Appalachia from your perspective and from just like the community that you've cultivated. So, but first, I'm just very interested. So one thing that we often ask guests on this show is a little bit about where they're from, and if you're comfortable talking about that, that's fine. If not, I know that you had like a recent doxing incident, so I want to be sensitive.
Oh God,
yeah.
So I do want to be sensitive.
The FBI is involved.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah. I'll keep it general. Yeah. So, born in Massachusetts. I grew up on the North Shore, north of Boston. So, by the time we got around to Fallout 4, it was interesting running around my neck of the woods.
Oh yeah, I bet.
Yeah, it's they did a really great job of interpreting Boston and like the North Shore, recreating that in Fallout. Yeah, always lived in New England my entire life, on the verge of moving out of New England, which is going to be a wild, life-changing experience.
Oh wow.
I'm kind of done with the snow.
I don't blame you. I live in Florida, and while there are things I can certainly complain about with it, snow is not one of them.
Yeah, it's just you get to a point where, you know, it's great in December, and then you just want to die for 3 months shoveling and snow blowing and all that stuff. But yeah, no, always lived in that area. I did spend summers growing up. My grandmother, our ancestral family home, is on a small island off the coast of New Brunswick, Canada. So every summer, first it was me, and then along came my little brother and sister. We'd spend summers with my grandmother up there, the old family home that dates back to the 1850s. So we'd hang out by the seaside, and there wasn't a lot to do up there. So it was a lot of listening to radio plays, a lot of book reading. That's where I fell in love with Stephen King and dove into a lot of his short stories at probably an early age that was not great. But it was the 80s, and horror was sexy. I had a Freddy Krueger lunchbox. It was a different time. Like, I was reading Alvin Schwartz books, the Scary Stories to Tell in the Dark. So I grew up really immersed in horror at an early age. It was there, around sitting by my grandmother's wood stove, that I really fell in love with reading, getting into writing stories of my own. We would have people come over the house, and this was pretty remote. And even in the 80s, I mean, you'd take a ferry boat over there. There's no TV. It's people coming over to talk, hang out, play the fiddle. It was very folksy in a way that is pretty interesting in terms of Appalachia culture. But it's folk stories and hanging out and people cooking together and baking bread in the wood stove. And that was kind of my formative years growing up there that really shaped me in a big way.
That's so interesting. I also love that, like, it sounds like you had to take a boat out to get there. Is that correct?
Yeah, it was a ferry boat, and
Oh, that's awesome.
yeah, it was it's a little bit of an unusual place. I mean, there's a monstrosity of a bridge now, which sadly changed the culture of the island considerably when it went in. But the ferry boat, sometimes the rope that it would pull itself along on was this massive steel cable that cut across the reach. Periodically, that would break.
Oh, God.
And so the tugboat would have to come out and make sure that the ferry boat wouldn't go out to sea. But it
That
could
is.
handle, I think, a total of only 6 cars on it.
Oh, that's interesting. That's rustic as hell, too. I love that. Well,
The
you
winter was
mentioned.
like, winter was super remote there. Like, very, if you've ever seen Stephen King's Storm of the Century, the vibe of that island and how the winter was represented in that was very much that. So once winter hit, you were kind of on your own. The ferry boat couldn't run. So people would get in their cars and drive across the ocean to get to the mainland. They would
Yikes.
put up a temporary ice road. And unfortunately, there's a long history of people getting lost in driving too far out to sea. And yeah,
Oh my
it's a very
God.
wild place.
I mean, that does sound like Stephen King, to be honest with you. Like, that's wild. Well, I love that that's sort of the background for some of, like, your formative years, because first of all, there is, like, this Appalachian flavor to it. And I think one thing I was thinking about when prepping for this interview is storytelling. Storytelling is a huge part of Appalachian culture. It's also a huge part of Fallout. Like, Fallout's lore is something that I wish that there was a book published with just it in general, because it's so beautifully written and so intricate. And I think that those two things marry each other really well. And so that really brings me into some of the storytelling that you do on your podcast, which I started listening to, and it's awesome. I love it.
Thank you.
I would love for you to tell us a little bit about how that started, what it's about, and all of that, because then it's formed around Fallout 76, which, for those people that aren't listening, is based in Appalachia and is wild to play if you're from West Virginia. I'll say that.
It's interesting because I'd stopped writing and creating for a good decade. I've always been into video games, and in the Boy Scouts growing up, the kind of the storytelling that I'd started doing by myself growing up was around my grandmother. I started writing my own ghost stories and telling those around the campfire at Boy Scouts.
Oh, that's awesome.
And then, after school, you get out there and, you get rejections and things fail and you work on some things in the film industry. I worked on the movie Session 9, which is kind of a cult classic horror
Oh,
film
interesting.
that takes place at the Danvers Asylum in Massachusetts. I did a lot of urbexing, but I gave up on writing, went into a career in marketing of all things, and then just kind of stopped writing. I fell in love with Fallout from Fallout 3. Just felt immediately in love with the world, got sucked right in. I loved the retro futuristic aspect, the dark humor, all of the elements that just really spoke to me. And the radio plays that were on the radio were just gold. So I played Fallout 3, New Vegas, Fallout 4, and then along comes E3, and Todd Howard comes out as he always does, and he's like, "Okay, well, it's Fallout." And I'm like, "Yay! It's a live online game." And I'm like, "Ooh."
That was my reaction too when I first heard.
I was skeptical, partly because I'd never played an online game before. My impression of what that would be like is, I'm pretty casual. I come home from a day of work, and you don't want to be murdered and insulted by a 12-year-old teabagging you, and then just like that's not the kind of gaming experience I'm looking for. I was pleasantly surprised. It ended up not being anything like I thought it would be. The gaming community of Fallout 76 is insanely wholesome. You end up meeting people in game, people start helping you build things, people are trading resources. It was super wholesome. And in that first year of the game, as broken as it was at launch, it's come a long way since then. It was a sandbox, the what for me ended up being the ultimate creative sandbox, because unlike previous Fallout games, there was no NPCs.
Yeah, I remember that.
What you had was a really interesting story. It was a risk that Bethesda took, in that you're given the breadcrumbs of notes and bodies and holotapes and a story that you feel like you just missed people. People were just alive. And now what you're confronted with is you step out of the vault into Appalachia, 26 years after the Great War of 2076 that just wiped out everything on Earth, and your job is to reclaim Appalachia, to rebuild civilization. And what you find is things are not at all what you thought they would be. And everybody is very much dead, even the survivors, for a variety of different reasons. It's a beautifully sad story, but that being devoid of life and connections and trying to find people and find your place in Appalachia ended up being the perfect kind of crock pot by which I found my muse again and started writing again. And so it started out by writing these kind of funny journal entries of my stories in Appalachia, trying to find my way and, find friendship and love and building these things that actually restart civilization and explore Appalachia and encountering cryptids and, getting ripped apart by a Wendigo, getting stepped on by the Grafton monster, all of like these great iconic cryptids from the Appalachia region. And I started writing these stories. They took off on Reddit. People were like, "Hey, you should turn into a podcast." I'd never created a radio drama before, never done audio of any kind. And I figured, all right, well, I'll try one episode. And we did. It was received well. And then it was kind of off to the races. We're getting to the tail end of our season two. We passed 1 million listens. And it's just kind of wild. This is the only thing I've ever done that's been successful.
I feel you on that. I understand.
Whatever.
Us
So you're
too.
like, yeah, whatever. Just deal with
You
shoot.
so I this is I know this is building to a question, but I kind of had like a light bulb moment when you were describing like the first like Fallout 76 and how I don't know why this has never occurred to me before, but the idea of reclaiming Appalachia is such a powerful metaphor for like what is currently happening with like the mine lands and how, God, I don't know if that was even a premise for this story, but my goodness, it must have had to have been, because you look at like how the coal companies have stripped the tops off of mountains, making it look like a war zone, and how now the people, whether they want to or not, are forced and tasked with reclaiming the land. I don't know why I never put those pieces together, but that's just such a wild metaphor sitting there right for people to take advantage of.
So I know some of the developers of the game, and you're spot on.
Really? Oh,
There
that's
is an
awesome.
entire region that tells the story of really the last century of what Appalachia has been going through, of people being used and abused, of resources being stripped by people from far outside the region who do not give a crap about the region. Capitalism gone mad, no regulation, government failing. The Battle of Blair Mountain is represented in the Fallout timeline not just once, but twice. So there actually is a terrible, terrible tragedy that takes place before we step out of the vault that you end up finding out about, in which the government very much acted against the citizens of Appalachia to stop an uprising, deploying some really awful weapons developed by, these shadow corporations that exist in the Fallout universe. But so many of that takes place in a region that has been completely destroyed. It is the ash heap. There literally is nothing left. It's devoid of life. It's cooked. There's coal fires still burning, like it's Centralia, Pennsylvania. Everything is literally on fire below ground, all because of just hubris and greed and all of the awful things that destroy pretty much everything in this country.
Well, that is, I love, no,
That's
it's
fair.
so fair, and it's, I'm glad that like you can confirm that from the development team, because that's something that I had a suspicion about. Because I like, just to give you some background, I played Fallout 76 when it first released. In fact, my wife got me the whatever you had to do to pay extra to get like the beta test of it. And like, I stopped playing for a while. I've not picked it back up since they did like the whole like reboot with NPCs, and I really need to. But so like, I did mostly just exploring the region and haven't really gone into the storytelling. So that's really awesome to hear. I love that. That's so cool.
Yeah, they've expanded it quite a bit. I mean, now, we can take adventures outside of Appalachia. So, we can fly over to Atlantic City, we can head up to the pit. The biggest expansion is actually in testing right now, that'll be dropping later this year, that the map has actually expanded south. And so now you can head down into the Shenandoah,
Oh.
the Skyline Drive update. And find a whole new main quest that they're introducing with what is the largest underground vault and experiment ever conducted by Vault Tech. So there's something really interesting going on in that
Oh,
region.
that's super interesting.
Yeah.
So I would love to know a little bit more about your show and like kind of the story behind it. And then would love to understand a little bit more about like your interactions within the 76 community, and like how, like, are people more interested now in the Appalachian region, to your opinion? Do you think like people have come to visit it? 'Cause like, I mean, that's been my perception, but I would just love your perspective.
They have, yeah. So the podcast ended up starting out as it often does. It was late night playing with a bunch of friends and having some drinks, having some fun, and we started having this stream of consciousness discussion about high school, and we realized that everyone in the group knew somebody named Chad in high school who was exactly who you think they would be, and so. Based on that, I started to imagine if coming out of the vault, if the vault is school, you step out into the region. Usually when we leave high school, the people that were a nuisance or a bother, you leave them behind, and for the most part, you never encounter them again. Well, this is a unique situation. So I imagined two people growing up in the vault, both stepping out, to reclaim Appalachia. One of them is just, a total Chad. And the other one is this other character. And what starts is their rivalry. They both choose what essentially are two different roads coming out of the region, one going one way, one going the other. It started out with just me kind of narrating for the first three episodes before I brought in a full cast, an ensemble cast. So now I think we have a total of 48 different characters,
Wow.
major and minor. So it's been a story that's grown quite a bit, including now we have of some of the original voice actors from the Fallout games coming into voice characters.
Dang.
Former Bethesda head of publishing Pete Hines plays a recurring villain
Really?
in the
Oh,
story.
that's incredible.
So it's been really interesting as far as where the story is going. We've got two seasons left to go.
So you've already capped it, is that what you're saying?
Not yet. Two seasons left to go. So we're almost to the end of our season two here. Then we're going to take a break for a bit.
I guess I should reword. You've already decided that it will end in two more seasons. Is that what
Oh
you're
yeah, I already
saying?
wrote the last episode. Yeah,
Okay,
I
that's what I
wrote it
was
a
wondering.
year ago. I hate shows that stay on too long, or at least, a great story, I think, has to know where it starts and has to know where it ends. I mean, you think about a lot of modern TV today because money talks. Sometimes shows reach their natural terminus and should just end there. But, we love them and we want more, and it prints money. So you keep going with the story, but you get diminishing returns where you feel like that the perfect moment to end on, you just kind of skip over. So no, I know exactly where I want to end up. You also had asked a question about Appalachia, and how this game has really impacted the region. I think what I was most impressed by is the capacity that this community has to work together to help people. One of the ways in which that has translated is a lot of the community have turned out to Point Pleasant every year to support the Mothman Museum and the Mothman
I
Festival.
love that. I
Bethesda,
love that so much.
the year that it launched was there. Bethesda had like a little booth and was, supporting the festival. Helvetia is practically in the middle of nowhere, but has become every year the Fallout community, a huge portion of them in cosplay, wearing Foshnot masks from the game that they've handmade to kind of match what you play in Fallout 76. Head on out to Helvetia from all over to participate in Foshnot.
That is so cool.
Last it was not last year, the year before, for the Fallout 25th anniversary, we did cosplay meetups across the country that our charity group had put together. And we did a meetup in West Virginia. So people poked into a few places. They spent Halloween at the Trans-Allegheny Asylum. They have a Halloween ball there that is not to be believed. So yeah, there was a whole bunch of the community going out there. It's just put a lot of people don't know too much about West Virginia. And so it's become kind of a beacon for Fallout fans who love the game and want to go check out the places in the game, particularly the White Spring Resort in the game, being the Greenbrier. People are blown away by the uncanny valley moment that happens when you visit the Greenbrier, and it is 1-to-1 perfect. It is exactly like you see it in the game, all the way down to the lighting and the trash barrels. Like Bethesda recreated everything, every fixture, every trash barrel, the layout. It's eerie, very eerie. Whereas the map of Appalachia, I mean, if you're from West Virginia, it's a little bit screwy because the map has to be distorted a little bit and twisted to kind of fit within the game world. But I think they did a good job of balancing those regions.
Yeah, it was I remember seeing that and being really blown away. Just like the realistic sort of aspect of some of the places and like the obscurity of some of the places that they put in that map. Like Hillbilly Hot Dogs is in the game. Hampden Park is, which I would argue looks very similar to how I went there, because I'm pretty sure that it was like a heap of rubble at the time that my parents took me there. But yeah, and then Blennerhassett Island, I got annihilated by a Deathclaw once on there, so that was fun too. that's I
The lighthouse. Everyone's there was the developer Nate Parkypile, who worked on the team that kind of spec'd out the design of Appalachia, did a road trip with the Bethesda developers. So they actually went out West Virginia, did a huge road trip. They take pictures, they do that whole thing when they created the game. And he's like, "Yeah, we got to create this lighthouse." And some of the developers that didn't go were like, "What? That doesn't make any sense." They're like, "No, there's a lighthouse." I'm like, "No, there isn't." "Yes, there is." And they pull out the picture and they're like, "All right, I guess we're putting a lighthouse in West Virginia." Okay.
Do we know? I guess I've got two questions. One, do we know why that they formed 76 about Appalachia, essentially? Like, why the map is based off of the region? Was there something that drew them there?
That's a great question. I can't remember if they've ever answered it.
Yeah, it just, we never, I mean, it's one of those things like this is a massive game, obviously. It's a huge company that's produced it. And we're all well aware, like, Appalachia doesn't normally get that type of love in terms of, an entire game based on, its map based on that. So I didn't know if somebody had some connection or, especially, West Virginia in general. It just seems like, they were like, what's one of the smaller states? Let's pick that one. And I just didn't know if somebody had a connection or not.
Yeah, I don't really know. A lot of times Bethesda will decide earlier on places that they would like to bring Fallout to. Todd had even mentioned that there's a drawer right now where they have a one sheet document that explains where Fallout 5 is going to be set. But Vault 76 and West Virginia is mentioned all the way back in Fallout 3 when you're in the Pentagon during the Brotherhood quest. And you're going through Vault Tech files, it talks about Vault 76. And even one of the DLCs, what's the name of it, with the Zaytan aliens that they dropped for Fallout 3, you find one of the holotapes where one of the Vault Tech CEOs was actually taken by aliens right outside the construction of Vault 76 in West Virginia. So they plant these breadcrumbs really early on before eventually they get there. I'm not sure why they decided on West Virginia specifically, though.
Well then,
I
oh,
was just
sorry,
going to
but sorry,
mention,
Joe.
I've always had a theory that it may have something to do with the bunker that's underneath the Greenbrier, just because of the whole like element of Cold
That's
War
fair.
era mythology. But yeah, I was just, yeah, that's an interesting question. I'd love to know the answer because, I mean, every other major game on that platform, it was like DC was Fallout 3, Fallout 4, like you mentioned, was like in the Boston area. So yeah, and then New Vegas, of course.
Good. Oh, well, quick question. So you just pointed out, like, obviously you're very well versed on these games. So I have to ask the question, have you noticed any breadcrumbs in 76 that lead you to believe what the next step is?
I've been looking really hard, and it's hard to tell because this game, unlike the single player games where you kind of have everything in place and you can kind of look at things, the game itself has changed so much from year one to now. It's kind of hard to see any concrete picture for what's next. Like, there's a lot of talk about, based on some things said, people think it's going to be San Francisco for Fallout 5, which would be really interesting. We've never done something that in that area of the West Coast,
Yeah,
so
that would
that
be
could be
interesting.
interesting. I would love to see New Orleans, honestly. I think that and down into the Texas
Ooh.
Panhandle, there's a lot of unique cultural elements in the same way that Appalachia has a unique culture. That region of the United States has a very interesting culture that
Very.
could be very Fallout-y. You've got bogs and bayous, you've got voodoo and weird Napoleonic code stuff going on. It could be something really cool.
I just like I love
Very
that
cool.
there has spurred not just a conversation about places like West Virginia, but people going and visiting and making it a part of like their experience with this game. And that's what I think when it first came out, it came out like a little bit before we started this podcast. So like it ended up not being super relevant for us to cover it when we started. And so that's why I'm glad that like the show came out, because it kind of just renewed interest in Fallout in general, which you've rightly pointed out on your Twitter feed. Like, I mean, it's ballooned on Steam and stuff like that. And like the user base has just shot up tremendously because of the show. And it was a great show, in my opinion.
So good.
Love Walton
So good.
Goggins. She's just
Oh,
a fucking
yeah.
incredible actor. And so humble too. I love him. And I think that's what we were like always hoping for, was like this would spur some sort of interest in West Virginia, because, you know, I mean, it's been the butt of every joke for God knows how long. And we pointed that out a lot. And I'm just so happy to hear that like people, like the community is such a supportive one, and that they're really having a lot of interest in the state and in the region and coming back to it. That's awesome to hear.
I think people have an impression of Appalachia, and it's interesting because you know what I do. As goofy as our show is, we deal with a lot of dark humor and you know a lot of in-your-face jokes and things like that. But there's also a lot of research and stuff I put into it. And one of the things that I was really saddened by that I didn't know is how badly kind of the hillbilly horror movies have doubled down on what has been a very like century-long painting of Appalachia and its people, arguably by really powerful corporations and media entities for a very particular reason. You know, if you want to take advantage of a region and its people, there's no better way, and the world has a very sad history of doing this. Of painting people in it as being undeserving or lesser. And so it's your job and right to come in and take advantage of things that they themselves don't know how to take advantage of. And you know, it's really sad reading a lot of that history in a way that people tend to dismiss simple things. Or for things that are more consumer driven. You know, we were talking about how stories and storytelling is such an indelible part of Appalachia culture in a way that really resonates with me and you know, the summers I spent with my grandmother. There's beautiful tradition in that simplicity of telling stories and folk music and live music. And just those kind of simple bonds, even folk medicine, which is a big part of Appalachian culture too,
Yeah.
in a way that's so easily dismissed or ignored or derided in this day and age, but actually has some real science to it.
That. Yeah, that's a good point. So
Absolutely.
you talked about, I guess, well, I don't know how to word this. You mentioned your grandma. You mentioned obviously growing up in New England. Obviously, this game has had a big effect on not only you and your, I'm assuming, career, but your life in general. Is it the driving, or was it the driving force for you to become interested in the region? And do you think that that is also something that has happened with other people that this game has now? You talked about them kind of visiting, but that it's become even bigger of an interest, kind of. I think you said a good word for it, cult classic, right? Like, you know, it's a cult classic. And now it seems like between these people, the region is kind of becoming one. Is that something that maybe you kind of took on personally, or that, you know, you've seen that effect?
Yes, very much so. And partly for all of the reasons that we talked about, there's an almost a familiar feeling to the region and its stories and its people in a way that related to me that I encountered on Atlantic Canada. And you know, it's the same kind of thing. Even there, there's been a long history of people taking advantage of, and you know, people just scraping by, except it's fishing, not coal.
Yeah.
But it's the same kind of thing. It's people, you know, strong family bonds just above the poverty line or just below it. And sadly, being taken advantage of or ignored, or and yet through that, you have this really unique culture that I think resonates with people. A lot of people who play Fallout 76 are very interested in West Virginia now, are planning trips. There's people now with the Shenandoah update are like, yeah, we'll do this road trip. We'll hit up West Virginia. We'll head down into Shenandoah. It'd be great.
Very cool.
So.
Very cool.
Some of my wife's family lives up in Maine. Her dad has a cabin up in Moosehead Lake, and so we went up there to visit a couple of years back. And I will tell you, like rural Mainers, like we're one of the most culturally similar people that I've met to like Appalachian people. And it was so interesting to just like be able to relate to somebody that I had no idea I would relate to, that were probably closer to Canada than they were from me. So it was really cool being up there and witnessing that.
Yeah, Moosehead is super remote.
Oh my God, yeah. It took like, I mean, there's a gravel road that used to be for timbering companies, and we had to drive 2 hours on it just to get to his cabin. It was wild. He's a bit of a hermit, so that makes sense, but it's beautiful, beautiful part of the country. Well, I wanted to wrap by asking you about this incredible effort that you put together, the Fallout for Hope charity. I knew it was successful. I had no idea how successful it was, so I looked more into it, and I would just love
I
if
didn't
you.
either. It's kind of like the show. You're like, all right, I guess this is a thing,
Yeah,
and I guess it's
I guess this
all
works.
right, whatever.
Look, it, we felt that way when Sarah Jessica Parker had a picture of her with one of our bags from our merch store. We were like, whoa, whoa, this happened? Okay, hold up. Pause the show. What's going on here?
That's awesome.
Weird
Yeah,
stuff.
Fallout for Hope. Maybe this goes back to values that you really only see in growing up a certain way. Reconnecting with writing for me was a really emotional thing. To see this not just be successful, but for Forbes magazine to be writing articles on it, for Bethesda to reach out to us, to invite us to Boston to perform live on stage.
So cool.
When they did, when they would call me out of the blue, I'm like, why is Bethesda calling me? You have this surreal conversation. You're like, no, this can't be real. And then it is. It's oddly validating in a way that, you hang up and then you just cry.
Absolutely. Yeah, dude,
Um, I
yeah.
don't
Blame you at all.
it This game, this community, and the way in which they've responded to the story added a lot to my life at a time when I really needed it. And then, going into COVID, during that year, marketing is one of the first things that companies stupidly cut during that. So that year was scary for us. As it
Yeah.
was for a lot of people. A lot of people lost their jobs. You're floating on credit cards. It's a whole thing. It was just a terrible year. Getting towards the end of that year, I, like a lot of people, was just in such a dark, empty place. And I didn't want the year to end without doing something to reset going into a new one. St. Jude Children's Research Hospital is something that we've cared about for many, many years and then donated to privately on our own. And I thought, well, what the hell? I've never been a streamer before. So I guess, I'll stream and we'll maybe get some of my friends to join us and we'll stream and we'll raise money for St. Jude. So we started that. It ended up being 5 people, then 15, and then a few hundred people streaming for St. Jude. And that first year, we raised $109,000 for the hospital.
That is incredible.
Yeah, I had a breakdown on air. It was not pretty. There was ugly crying.
It's
And so I
so
said,
cool,
you know
though.
what? This is not just great. It's choosing hope over despair. And I wanted for this to be a thing permanently. So we created the Fallout for Hope charity initiative that we've been running since December of 2020. In all that time, the community, the Fallout community, and some of the Elder Scrolls community now have raised over $605,000. Not
Wow.
just for St. Jude, but we're raising money for other things, planting trees in inner cities. We're working with some of the Bethesda voice actors now on the Alzheimer's Association. That
I
campaign
saw that.
started here on May 1st and runs through June 16th. And it's bringing voice actors and developers together with gamers to raise money for the Alzheimer's Association. I've lost two people that I love to Alzheimer's, and voice actor Wes Johnson, who's been in the Fallout games since Fallout 3, an absolute wonderful man, insanely talented voice actor, iconic voice actor, plays Shayo Gorath on the Elder Scrolls,
He
Hermaeus
is.
Mor,
I,
like
I'm sorry to interrupt you. He
he's
is just.
crazy
He
good.
is one of the best voice actors of all
Yeah,
time,
hands
period. And I
down.
was so hyped to see that he was a part of that.
Yeah, he I think he was voted as the best, the most beloved voice actor in all of Bethesda and ZeniMax games.
I believe it.
Super nice guy, but he's lost people to Alzheimer's. So we every year we get together and support his initiative to end Alzheimer's, so you don't lose people before you lose them.
Very solid.
I love that so much. And that's just look, I you don't get better than him. I mean, he's the best when it comes to voice acting. So that's so awesome. John, I know you had something to end it on, so I'm gonna kick it over to you.
Well, two things. One, we often, and this is, I guess, two ending things. One, I'm very thankful that this game came out because I've never played this game. I remember when it came out, and I remember how pumped Chuck was for it. Those are the two things I can remember is like release date, how excited Chuck was, and then I remember seeing like the initial reviews not being what I thought they would be. They weren't as high as I thought, but it's fantastic that it sounds like they turned the tide. And what Chuck said earlier really kind of, I don't know, pushed me to think this. He talked about rural Maine and how it connected to, Appalachia, and he didn't know that until he got there. That's what I think this game has given this region. There are millions of people who have looked at this region and said, eh, it's not for me. But that game allowed them to see aspects that they never would have looked at ever. And because of a game, how people say you waste your time playing video games, but because of a game, they now are attracted to this region. They're now attracted to the state. They now understand some of the basic aspects of it. And like you said, they even get a glimpse at the economic theft and thievery and taking advantage of all of those things that have happened to this region. And I think, and I hope that it's opened up some eyes and people now, it seems like, are supporting the region and understand some of the downfalls of it, but also can see the beauty of it as well. So I'm thankful to hear that. It's was great listening to that. And then secondly, listening to your charities and helping St. Jude's, which is a fantastic hospital system. We often in entertainment make the wrong people successful, and I'm very glad that it sounds like now we've finally gotten one person right, and that is you and your podcast. I'm so thankful for that, and very happy to see somebody actually who is doing the right stuff. So I'm thankful for that. And
Hard agree.
again, I've never sat down and listened to your podcast, but now I want to. And I don't even care about this game except for the fact that Appalachia's in it, right? But now I want to because of just how nice of a guy you are and what you're doing.
Thank you. It's also no small feat. Like now we have an amazing staff running Fallout for Hope that are helping me grow it in a way that I absolutely couldn't on my own. There's now over 756 volunteers on the team
Wow.
from 86 countries. So it's become very much a global charity initiative,
Wow.
running a few times a year. And I 100% agree with you. I think my greatest frustration is there are people who could change lives in an instant and do such good and be respected so much more, that spend their days making people miserable on Twitter, or spending their money doing awful things for humanity as a, I just don't understand it. I don't understand how you could have that much money and not be miserable, or not use it to not be miserable. I don't get that. It doesn't compute for me.
No.
Great question. But we often wonder that about most people. But again, I'm very glad to hear that this game, really pushed you and a lot of other people to the region. And obviously it turned out well for a lot of people and organizations and all that you're giving back. So we're thankful there. And like I said, I've never played this game in my life. I'm gonna go downstairs to my PS5 and find it. And I'm gonna download it and I'm gonna try it and I'm gonna get killed millions and millions of times, but that's okay because I'm at least gonna see the Greenbrier at one point. That's what I've heard.
I'm gonna log on and just blow you up with a nuke. So that's what's gonna
I
happen.
believe that. I believe that to be true.
Yeah, I think Fallout 76, if you have Amazon Prime, I think you can still claim it. That was one of the things that the TV
Oh,
show
perfect.
negotiated through Amazon. So you should still be able to claim that for free on
Perfect. I'm
Amazon Prime.
grabbing
But and yeah, the chat, the podcast, if you want to check it out, it's Chad, a Fallout 76 story, and we're on pretty much every platform: Spotify, iTunes, Amazon, wherever you want to listen to podcasts.
Awesome. Well, thank you so much. We'll put all the links in the show notes, especially to the Fallout for Hope charity, because I know you said the Voice Palooza is going on now. And I'm going to participate in that because I too have lost many members of my family to Alzheimer's. So that's something that I just am really happy to see that you all are a part of and that Wes is a part of. Ken, thank you so much. This has been a
Yeah,
really
thank you.
awesome and like such a cool interview. I'm so glad that we got to do it, and
Yeah,
I'm
thank you
just
guys
so
for having
happy
me.
to have you on.
Yeah, and it's anybody can get involved in Fallout for Hope if you want to. If you want to stream for it, raise money. It's a completely open-ended team. There's no requirements or anything. That's just going to falloutforhope.com. Then you click the join button and sign up and
Maybe,
get involved.
Chuck, maybe we should do a stream.
We could, man, we could. I'll do it. I'll do
I mean,
anything.
look, I'll get blown up
Chuck and John in
for
Appalachia.
charity. I'll get
Chasing
blown up for
cryptids,
charity.
making names, solving
Oh
mysteries.
my God.
That's
This no,
right.
that could be an overnight hit. We'll do it. We'll do it. Awesome. Well, thanks so much, Ken. We really
Would
appreciate it.
actually, pitch me an idea. It wouldn't be a bad idea to actually explore the way in which Fallout 76 took some of the socio-political things that we were talking about and interpret them into game. That could be an interesting exploration
I
for you.
think it could.
Look
I
at
mean,
that.
that tickles the research part of my brain, I'll tell you that much.
Oh, before we sign off, I do have one last question because I forgot to ask this. How many times have you played this game? Have you played it through, I'm assuming? Or can you play it through? I don't know.
Well, it's a country road. It never ends. It's the place along the way.
Okay. All right.
But no, to
Perfect
be fair,
answer.
it's a live service game. So I mean, there's you can play through the main quest. The year one main
Okay.
quest was different. And then they keep introducing new main quests. So you keep playing through, but then there's also daily options. Right now, cryptid hunting is a big thing. So, if you want to go chase down West Virginia cryptids, kill them and mount them to your wall, that's very popular this time of year.
Nice.
Well, okay. I look, I'm not going to challenge Mothman anytime soon. He's done some crazy things, or allegedly has done some crazy
Allegedly,
things, so
yes.
I'm not going to do that. But yeah, so okay, so I get it now. It seems more on the send it, on the realm of like a Grand Theft Auto where it constantly gets updated
That's
and
exactly
constantly
right. Yeah.
changes. Okay. All right, now I get it. Makes sense.
Yep.
Awesome.
Perfect.
Well, this has been amazing, Ken. Again, thank you so much. And I will be listening to the rest of your
Yeah, thank you guys.
podcast and checking out Fallout for Hope. And I'm sure a lot of our listeners will be too. So thank you for taking the time and talking with us.
Yeah, thank you guys very much.
Awesome. All right. Well, that was our interview with Kenneth. Go check out his podcast and his fundraiser, Fallout for Hope. He's got some of the greatest voice actors in America on there doing some great stuff. And speaking of great stuff, carnivores love great stuff. One thing they love so much is beef. And John is quite familiar with that.
True, I am. This week I do have beef, Chuck, and it is with, oh, it's a big one. It's a big one. It's one, I don't know if we've ever taken on anything quite this big. I mean, this is out of this world big.
We've crossed coasts before, but never left the atmosphere.
No, I've fought people from the Commonwealth of Kentucky to California to England, but I've never had beef quite this far away. But it's with our, what used, look, they're still friends. It's from our friends at NASA. Good old NASA. Doing great work. NASA. They do great work, Chuck.
Never a straight answer, NASA.
That's just like attorneys. Yeah. I guess we don't have beef. I guess we just have a lot in common. NASA is doing something crazy, Chuck. They are. And well, if you didn't.
Covering up the moon landing?
They are covering up the moon landing, but they are also building a railway system on the surface of the moon. Yes, as. Awesome. I mean, look, drill, baby, drill. That's what I always say. And if you can't do it here, you might as well do it on the moon because there's no legislature stopping you there.
No, you're right.
They're drilling. The railway system is going to be a robotic transport system, and it will support future lunar activities of astronauts visiting the moon. Now, hold on real quick, Chuck. If I come to your house, okay, and I start building something. Let's say I put in a basketball hoop at your house.
That'd be dope. I've always wanted one.
Well, what would you find not great?
Other kids coming and using it and then loitering on my lawn.
Okay. How about this? I put a toilet.
Hip check to me.
I put two toilets in your front yard.
So I'm not getting
with signs.
God damn it.
That say RFK was here. No, anyone could use it. It says, oh, free bathroom, right? Would you want a visitor doing that to your home?
I'm so confused with where you're going.
I've got a good point, pal.
Would I want people coming and shitting on my lawn?
No, but would you want me to come and build?
My dog does that.
Do you want me to come build shit on your property?
If you're going to renovate a kitchen, yeah.
Stop. Stop making it sound like I'm HGTV. Jesus Christ.
I guess you want me to answer no, so I'm going to say no.
I'm not the host of Home Makeover. Oh man. Anyway, to me, visitors don't come and just build shit is my point. But they're saying when we we're going to the moon, which is not ours, by the way. We don't own the moon, and we're just building shit for future visits like it's a tourist attraction. That's my point. Visitors don't just build shit on places they don't own. You get what I'm saying?
I mean, that's a good point. Good point. However, if we found a Native American tribe on the moon, the United States would be all over getting on there.
We would own it at that point. I'm sure Congress would make sure.
I'm sure Chris Miller would be right there saying,
"Oh my God,
elect me. We're buying the moon.
We ain't buying it. We're taking it.
Taking it."
Anyway, they're building this railway. Okay, NASA's great, but two questions I've got here, Chuck. One. Why are we building this on the moon when the moon is not ours? Okay. So do we have other people involved? Two, can we finish any public transport project on Earth first?
Yeah. Let's get Amtrak to like fucking.
Yeah. I pray the railway's not run by our current transport system.
I also don't know. Amtrak goes to Beckley, it may, but I was just thinking of a random town.
Well, it's about to go to the moon.
Sure, yeah. First of all, this thing looks objectively cool as shit. Not against it. I'm just for trains on Earth more.
Also, it's called Float. That's what the system is called. It's called Float. The Float system. But we can't finish any railways here. West Virginia has none. No public transport by rail. What are we doing?
It's like, okay, first of all, I admire their commitment to long-range planning. They don't even have civilization, but they're building public transit. Okay, that's what we should have done in America. We didn't. This is the problem with the United States. We're a car-centric nation, aside from, like, you know, your Chicago's and New York's of the world. And it's just, you look like you're so confused.
Yeah, go ahead. What I just read, I need your opinion on, because I'm not smart enough to comprehend it.
Well, I just think that there's such little investment, like real investment in expediting public transit, that it's just like it's never a thing here. Whereas major industrialized European countries, it's everywhere. Now, there's obviously some differences with infrastructure there and everything, but... And just the ability to do it, but still, it's like there's a lot you could do, especially with high speed rail.
Good point. Now, here's a question I've got. All right, so this is obviously above my pay grade. It's above your pay grade, but maybe you'll understand it because I don't. Why can we not do something like this on Earth? Okay, that's my question. It says drawings by NASA suggest the plans call for flat magnetic panels called. I had read this part before I started reading it out loud. Called robots. I don't know why they were like, called robots.
What the fuck?
Anyway, called robots to float or levitate. I get why we can't do that. But anyway, over a flat rail line or track, the robots have no moving parts and are unpowered, but they are pushed along the track by electromagnetic energy.
Oh, like they're being guided on the track by magnets.
Yeah.
That's cool as shit.
Yeah, like that's what I'm saying is, that is, I feel like that's applicable technology that could be used on Earth, I guess is my point.
This is where we'd have to phone a friend with Space Gal.
Phone a friend. Actually, all right, Space Gal, if you're listening, I need answers. I would love that. I actually would too.
We need to have her back on the show. She's awesome. I don't know anything about magnetic poles on Earth, let alone the moon, but I'm wondering how they work on the moon and if they might work differently.
I mean, I'm sure it does. We are just nowhere near smart enough to know what that means. It's 38 miles?
What is?
No. Okay, I got it now. Anyway,
the moon is 38 miles away. Shit, all right.
Yeah, dude, that's why we're getting a train. I love that we're getting NASA back on track. But what I will say, I knew you'd like that one. But what I will say is, I just wish we could finish, you know, an infrastructure or transportation project here before we start doing it on the moon. That's my solid point. Right.
How
there.
Many projects have gotten canceled just because either the money didn't come through or it was going to be like hundreds of billions of dollars? Like they canceled a high speed rail from San Francisco to LA or something like that, or Sacramento, something in just state California, because it was going to be like billions upon billions of dollars. And it's like, it's a fucking train and track, guys. We got to figure this shit out. Like this is technology that's been around for centuries.
Yeah, Will Smith had it in the movie Wild West.
Yeah.
Wild Wild West.
Turns out the magnetic field of the moon is very weak, so I was completely wrong.
Oh, okay. So. All right. So, sounds like we could do it here. That's what I'm saying. I don't know, but it sounds like we got a shot. Sounds like we got a real shot at this, kid.
We do.
But, last thought, we often complain about foreign aid, but we're literally sending money to the moon.
Yes, that's right. No more foreign aid to the moon. Although I am very supportive of funding NASA, just not to NASA, not the moon. And this is going to the moon.
Yeah, maybe not. Let's do some railways here first, and then prove to me you can do a good railway, and I'll let you do it on the moon.
A proof of concept, NASA.
Yeah, it's like a kid who wants to buy a big canvas, like a big art canvas, but they've never actually drawn a hand turkey. I want to see the hand turkey before I invest in the canvas. That is what I want to see, Chuck.
NASA?
I want to see some right here. Earth Railways.
NASA, you're on the hook for the hand turkeys.
Give me the hand turkeys, you can have the moon canvas. That's all I'm saying.
Man, I would take
that. So anyway, what a deal. What a deal.
That seems like as good a place as any to call it a day on this show. Thank you all so much for listening. Go check out Kenneth's podcast and Fallout for Hope charity. And check out Gwen Levy and the Breakdowns, because we're going out on their song.
What does she do with her car?